Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome back to Tech Talk. I'm Dave Williams. Tech Talk, of course, your regular journey into the world of technology from a blindness and partially sighted perspective. And don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's your program and we always love to hear from you. So get in touch. The email address, as always, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's T-E-C-H, talk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, Callum Stoneman will be demonstrating how to find the eloquence voices in iOS 16. He'll also be speaking with Hable One about their smartphone keyboard, and I'll be catching up with Humanware about the new Stellar Trek. So that's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Joining us, as ever, are our co-hosts, Tasni Marshad and Callum Stoneman. Welcome in to you both.
Hello, good to be here. And really looking forward to hearing more about the iOS 16 features and also from Humanware, learning about the Stellar Trek. Very interested to hear more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this has been, the Stellar Trek has become a bit of a talking point in the blind community, really. You know, that's their latest kind of GPS, and it's interesting, yeah, to see if it's how good it is and hear some of the new features. They've got a lot of interesting things in there, so
yeah, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that in future shows. Well, thanks both for joining us, and settle in for another Tech Talk. It's often said that synthesized voices are highly subjective. We all have our preferences. And one voice that has been particularly popular in the blind community for many decades now is, of course, the eloquence voice, that default voice that you hear when using JAWS for Windows and many other products besides. Well, it has eventually come to iOS, the operating system that powers many of Apple's mobile devices, and Callum Stoneman is along now to tell us more.
iOS 16 has recently been released and is now available for all iPhones from the iPhone 8 and newer, and there's a whole bunch of new accessibility features in this update. Some of them we've already heard quite a lot about. We've got things like door detection for the devices with LiDAR, we've got improved captioning and live captions for those who are hearing impaired, and new voices and new languages for voiceover and speak selection. But one of the new options that Apple seemed to keep a bit quiet from us was the eloquence voice. So you can now use the eloquence range of voices for voiceover. So this will be familiar to you if you've used JAWS on Windows and you've used the default voice on there, the default options, then that is eloquence and that is what you'll be used to. And you can now get that on iOS. So first off, the default voice is usually Daniel, if you're in the UK, as I am. But I've changed mine. I'm using the Serena voice. That seems to be my kind of go-to. So the way you can get to the voice options is by going to Settings, Accessibility, and then VoiceOver. Or you can take the shortcut there using Siri. Open VoiceOver Settings.
Settings, accessibility, back button.
And you might have noticed Siri has got some new tones as well. So we're in the voiceover settings now, and I'm now going to look for speech.
Voiceover practice, button, speaking rate, speech, button.
There it is. So double tap.
Voice, Serena, button.
And then it's put me straight on the voice button, and it tells me that I'm using the Serena voice. But if we double tap on this.
Selected, English UK, heading.
And then it's now taken us to the list of voices. We've got a list of different languages and accents and things like that. But if we have a flick through the UK one, let's see what we've got.
Daniel, button. Eloquence, button.
And there it is. Eloquence is there. I'm going to go down to the US because I feel like that's the one that people will be most familiar with. So I'm just going to navigate by headings until we get to English US.
English Australia, heading. English India, English Ireland, English Scotland, English South, English US, heading.
There it is, English US. So I'm now going to flick to the right to go through the list of options in here.
Agnes, button. Alex, Alison, Ava, but Bruce, button. Eloquence, button.
Okay, there's eloquence, so if we double tap.
English, us, heading.
And then these are all the eloquence voices that we've got. So if we just have a flick through this.
Eddie, actions available. Flow, act grandma, act grandpa, act read, actions of Rocco, actions available. Sandy, Shelley, Shelley.
So they're all the voices. These are the same on the UK section as well. The only difference is they've got a UK accent on there instead of a US accent. And on all of these, you can do a one finger swipe down and you'll hear speak sample. And if you double tap then, you can just hear a sample of that voice. It'll just say a short phrase without actually switching to it. But to switch to it, you just double tap on these. So I'm going to go to read because that is the Jaws default.
Sandy, Rocco, at read. Actions available.
So I'll double tap on that.
Selected. Read. Grandpa. Actions available.
And there we go. We can exit out of settings now. So I'm just going to go back.
Selected. Eloquence. Read. Button.
And if I go back to my home screen.
FaceTime.
And navigate around.
Calendar. Tuesday. Photos. App Store. Clock. 1920. Maps. Weather. Notes. Reminders.
And of course, this is just your standard voiceover, you know, voiceover voice. So you've got all the usual options within settings and on your rotor, so you can change the speed, you can change the pitch, all those usual settings that you've always got. So there you go. That is my iPhone 13 Pro running the Eloquence voice.
Joining me now to talk about iOS 16, Callum Stoneman and Tasneem Arshad. Callum Stoneman, you have obviously taken the plunge. Is it just Eloquence or is there anything else in there that tickles your fancy?
Do you know what? I'm going to be a bit controversial. I'm not a big fan of Eloquence, to be honest. But I've played with it, but, you know, and it is good, but I'm not really using that. But I do, there are some other things in there. There are some other new voices in there, a little bit less robotic than Eloquence. And then the door detection as well is another highlight for me because I've got a phone with LiDAR. So I'm looking forward to, I haven't had a chance to kind of try it out yet and have a play with it, but I'm looking forward to trying out the door detection. I do think that in certain circumstances and certain situations, that could be really helpful because we've all had it, you know, you get to, your GPS gets you to near a building, but, you know, where's the actual building? Where's the entrance? So, you know, that could be useful. So I'm looking forward to playing with that. And then just the kind of new features in general, you know, you can kind of customize your lock screen now. You can put kind of widgets and icons on your lock screen for quick access to information. Again, it's not something that I've really used because I've got an Apple Watch, so I've got the kind of complications that I need, as they're known, on my my watch face. But if you don't have an Apple Watch or if you've got something that the Apple Watch doesn't support, then, you know, being able to quickly put, I don't know, weather or battery levels on your lock screen is pretty nice.
Yeah, and you can recall messages as well. If you send a message, in error, you can bring that back.
Yes.
In the hope that somebody hasn't read it already. And when you've got your AirPods in, it's easier to find the settings now, I've found. Tasneem Arshad, you are waiting for the dust to settle.
Yeah, I think for me, it's more helpful to just wait until all of the sort of bugs and things are settled, if there are any, in iOS 16. And and then I think I will play catch up. I'm quite happy to wait for the teething issues to be resolved. But in terms of like Eloquence, it's wonderful for work. It's pretty robust, but I don't want to be hearing it, you know, in my personal life. I'd much prefer to use maybe some of the other voices that are available, or just voiceover in general is pretty good for me.
That's interesting. So you associate Eloquence with work and then you have a different voice that you would use for kind of leisure activities.
Yeah, because I'm using Eloquence. I mean, there's a few different voices, like the Scottish one and the Australian one. I tried changing the profiles over because I thought actually they're much softer and nicer to be hearing all day. But I was informed by the sort of tech people that actually Eloquence is the most robust because you could detect sort of the odd tremor in some of the other profiles, and apparently Eloquence was the most robust. So I ended up sticking with Eloquence, and, you know, for work tasks, very efficient at work, can't fault it, but I absolutely do not want to be listening to it in my personal life at all. So it's very much a work thing for me with Eloquence. Anything on a personal device is very much, any other voice would be fine, but Eloquence, I just, yeah, that's just restricted and limited to work.
Okay, well, I'm liking Jamie. Have you played with that Callum? Found the Jamie voice? He's quite good, isn't he?
Yeah, I remember you showing me that. That is quite nice, actually. I do kind of switch between that and my usual Serena voice. I do find Jamie is a bit clearer in certain situations.
And he's also in watchOS 9 as well. So if you have an Apple Watch that supports watchOS 9, you'll find Jamie on there as well. But no eloquence on the watch, I don't think.
No eloquence. Yeah, that's a weird one. So you can get quite a few different voices on the watch. Well, I think all the voices that are available on iOS, apart from eloquence, they're all on the watch. Whereas before, you were limited to, I think, just one voice or Siri, weren't you? When you're limited to the default, so in the UK it was Daniel, or you could have the Siri voice, but that was about it. You couldn't sort of change to, a different UK voice. But yeah, you can now. They've made them all available, as we said, apart from Eloquence. I'm not really sure why, because it is coming to the Mac as well. Eloquence, when macOS Ventura comes out, it will be on there as well. But yeah, just not on the watch
Do
for
let us
me.
know what you're using. Have you upgraded to iOS 16? What do you like? What don't you like? What voices are you using? And are you like Tasneem? Do you use a particular voice for work and another voice for something else? You can, of course, do that now. So let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk for all of that and anything else you fancy. Callum Stoneman, Tasneem Arshad, thanks very much. Now, obviously, getting out and about is challenging for many blind and partially sighted people, but technology can help. And one company that's been at the forefront of this challenge is HumanWear, of course. The line of Trekker devices has been around with us for quite some time. And joining us now from HumanWear to talk about the company's most recent announcement are Martin Roberts and Alan Davies. Thank you very much to you both for joining me on Tech Talk. Why don't you just both tell us about your roles at HumanWear? Let's start with you, Martin.
Hi, I'm Martin Roberts, and my role, I do blindness product, mainly sales, but I also do a little bit of support as well. I travel around the country independently, and I think that's a big thing because I don't generally have any drivers or workers with me. I travel independently and I go and show our products to customers. And then if people are really, having problems, I'll go and help out and make sure that we get the best solution for them and that we look after them. And just to David, I know you mentioned that the Trekker had been around for a long time. I saw my first Trekker device in 2003 in Bristol at where I first met Alan, actually. It was an exhibition run by Bristol University helping blind people gain employment. And that's where, coincidentally, I first met Alan and I first decided to apply for HumanWear's job.
Alan, you're the boss, aren't you?
Well, I've made some big decisions. Obviously, taking Martin on was one of the biggest ones and one of the best. But my name is Alan Davies. I'm the UK sales manager and also Ireland. I cover Ireland as well for HumanWear. So, yes, yeah, been there for a long time.
So let's talk about the Trekker range of devices. So I guess the most sort of current and kind of popular one has been the Trekker Breeze. So this is a sort of a handheld device. Have I got this right, Martin? You're the expert here. So you've got this sort of tradition of having these sort of handheld devices. Lots of people are familiar with the Victor Stream players, of course, with nice tactile buttons and long battery life for listening to audiobooks. And I suppose some of those design cues have made their way over to your handheld GPS devices.
So the current device, we had two versions of the Trekker Breeze. We had a Breeze and then a Breeze Plus with the better GPS chip. Technology moves on. The current device that we've been selling for the last, I'd say, 3 or 4 years is the Victor Trek. And the Trek is a combination of our Victor Reader device with all the, talking books abilities, with all the Wi-Fi, internet radio, recording from radio, Wikipedia access and so on, but combined with a GPS solution. So that what was the Trekker Breeze got combined into the Trek. And we combined that so that people could have information, entertainment, and GPS on the go. And so that was around for a while. And we are currently launching the Stellar Trek, which will run alongside the standard Trek. And they do different things, and we'll get into that later on.
Excellent. Right. So the Stellar Trek is a new member to the family then. Alan, who's the market for these people? Who's the audience? Who are you sort of hoping is going to get involved with these devices?
Well, I think it's fair to say, David, most in our products, our GPS products in the past, have been used by people with very little or no useful vision. And, you know, it's been designed in that case for those people. Because I think, you know, a lot of people with low vision, that, you know, they'll be on the bus with a monocular using it, etc. And out and about, they can probably see the street signs and see some of those landmarks and clues around them. So it would be, I think it would be mostly people with very, very little or no useful vision. And people who, you know, a lot of people have done for many years and will continue to use their phone, which is great because, you know, it's great that it's so accessible for them. But there's always that group of people who find the tactile buttons a much easier interface to use, are much more comfortable with it out and about, don't get worried about the battery running down, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think that's sort of the people who are going to be using it. It's very straightforward to use. That's one thing we've designed. You know, it's 100% of our customers are visually impaired, so we have to design products with that. You know, it's very first nature for us to design products in that way.
Martin, let's just talk through some of the features then. So you've got the new announcement. Well, don't you just tell everybody about the Stellar Trek?
Okay, well, the Stellar Trek takes the technology that we had in the standard Trek that we've been enhancing for the last few years, and it enhances that technology with both hardware upgrades and software upgrades. So within the hardware, we obviously have new GPS hardware in here. With that, we are able to support things like GLONASS, which is the Russian GPS system, as well as the standard American one. We also support the Chinese satellite system, which I do forget the name of. So if anyone remembers that, please let me know. And we also have support for, drumroll, Galileo. And this isn't, you know, this is support that works. Galileo is not delivering its 1 meter accuracy to anyone at the moment, as if you've got a phone with Galileo support. Any of the recent iPhones in the last 3 years, you will have that support. So if you've used GPS, you're not going to get that, you know, 1 meter that we've been promised for the last, well, certainly since 2005, I've been talking about it with people.
Right, so they're future technologies that are going to hopefully improve the accuracy in terms of where you are.
Yeah, it's built in though, it works. It's built in, we are using these systems now. So as they improve, we'll improve. Also with the hardware, we've cut down the number of buttons. A lot of people loved, our best-selling product ever has been the Victor Reader Stream. And we kept that design for the Victor Trek. So what we did is we got told by a lot of rehab workers, a lot of people in the field that actually, you know what, when I'm walking around, there's just too many buttons. You know, you've got a phone keypad and then probably another, you know, 5-6 buttons besides, and that many, you know, 16, or, you know, 18, 20 buttons on a device is just too much, they said to us. So we cut down the amount of buttons on the device. So on the fascia of the device, there are 5 buttons and a D-pad. So up, down, left and right. This just makes it a lot easier to kind of use and to issue commands on the move. We have had to make alterations to how we do things. So, for example, when we're using our keyboard input, we have a virtual QWERTY keyboard where you move along the keyboard. So you'd be put on the Q and you down arrow and right to the S or the D and so on. But we also have an alphabetical keyboard, which is the ABC keyboard, which you just push right, 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 left, 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 left. So you want to go to A, B, C, D, E, F, G, etc. You just move along. So we've altered the interface.
Does this do routes, or is this telling me about information around me? What does it actually do?
Broadly, at the moment, the same feature set as the Trek. So it does routes. Obviously, you can do a route from A to B, from postcode to postcode. You can also record a route. So if you are walking with a sighted friend or maybe a rehab worker, you can start the Stellar Trek recording and it will drop breadcrumbs at significant, we call them waypoints in the route. And you can then use that route again, say if you go to the chemist or if you go to the vets with your dog, you can use that route to be guided the way that you know is safe or that someone else has shown you is safe. If you typically do a route with GPS, it will just send you on the shortest route. And sometimes that's not the best route for a visually impaired person.
Right, and all of these things are augmentative. It's important to emphasise that, isn't it? That if you're a guide dog user or you use a long cane, clearly it's really important that before you start including any other, you know, technology in that mix, that your core mobility skills are, you know, are pretty solid. And then you might want to consider how you, you know, develop your ability to navigate using a device. Like, I mean, would you hold it in your hand? Would you use it with bone conduction headphones? How would you typically use the Stellatrek?
There are a few ways of doing this. So it comes with a belt clip. So you can put it on a belt or on a probably the side of a rucksack or anywhere that you can hook a device. It's also very handy. There's a grip on the back, so it's nice in your hand. It hasn't got that kind of bar of soap effect, if you know what I mean, where you get some products and they slip. So there's a nice grippy plastic on the back, so you can hold it firmly. Some people will just put it in their bags and use some kind of bone conduction or Bluetooth or speaker with it if they want to hear where they're going, and they might not even touch it. So it really depends how the person wants to use it. Do you have anything to add to that, Alan, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important what David said. This is not a mobility aid, and we should make that very clear. That is for totally blind person, the guide dog or the cane. And it's a, you know, it's a where am I aid. It's a how do I get from A to B aid. It's also got additional features as well, which we'll come on to in a moment. But yeah, the whole idea is it's used in, with one hand, with nice, clear, tactile buttons, really good speaker. We've increased the volume of the speaker, so people are out on the street, they can use it. It's also got a 3.5mm jack. So if you're traveling on the bus and want to know where you are, but you don't want everyone else on the bus to hear it, you could plug in a standard set of headphones, or you say use the Bluetooth, particularly bone conducting headphones when you're walking on the street or on the, in a vehicle. Is there, but I guess the other thing it is to come on to is the what it has that other systems didn't have, which is this artificial intelligence and the cameras. So, you know, GPS systems of all devices, also on a phone, will get you from A to B. You know, that's the principle of them. But you might put in a route to go to number 22, the high street, but you don't know when you're there. When it tells you you've arrived, you're not sure whether you're at number 17. You could be on the other side of the road, or number 24, number 28. So what happens when you've finished, when you've arrived at your destination, finished the route, it will automatically prompt you whether you wish to take a photograph to clarify your location. And then that's when we use the two cameras in the back. It automatically will take photos. You hold it up to where you think the door may be, to get an understanding where the streets and the houses may be, if it's a residential area. And it will take a photo when it recognises the door and will identify if it is a door and if there's a house number or building number associated with it. So, you know, if you're looking for number 22 and it says 17, you know you're on the wrong side of the road. So, you know, it's a case of being able to, you know, find a safe place and cross safely and use that facility. And we'll tell you whether it's straight ahead of you or number, you know, 1 o'clock, give you clock face directions to where you're going. So is that AI aspect, which is the marketing people call it the final 40 feet to the door, finding the door, is it the door? And I think it's the excitement of where that can now lead in the future, because what we want to be able to do is take that another step and walk into hotels, walk into lobbies, find out where the reception is on your left or the right, where the lifts are, where the toilets are, that type of thing, which hopefully will come in the future. Today, we're looking at doors, we're looking at numbers, and it will give you that information. And you can choose to do that at any time. I say it'll automatically prompt you when you've arrived at a destination that you've followed. But if you're in an area, in a, like a shopping area, because GPS works outside, but if you was in a shopping mall, there's no reason why you couldn't look around you and take pictures to identify the shop names and what's, you know, what sale offers are on in the shop windows, that type of thing, to give you an understanding. So we're trying to use the camera technology combined with AI technology. It's the very early steps, you know, but the thing is, all these are updatable via Wi-Fi. We're talking about, Martin, we talked about the keyboard earlier and the onboard keyboard, virtual keyboard, and plugging in a keyboard. I mean, the real purpose of that is just when you're at home to get it, your Wi-Fi password, to be able to start using the device and to download your maps that you want to install, your country maps that you want to install. And also you can rename your own landmarks, which we know from feedback, a lot of people say, I've got 100 landmarks and it's, you know, my own voice, bus stop and house, a home. And you can actually edit those and make them a textual voice rather than listening to your own voice mention. But ordinarily, you don't use it with the keyboard once you've set it up. That's all done. It's just one in your hand, either on your belt clip or being held as you're walking.
I'm keen to try it, Alan. So the camera then is how close do I need to be to the entrance for it to pick that up? If the house is set back a little bit, or if I'm in a taxi, is that going to work?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you're introducing any camera technology, you're introducing variables. The most obvious variable is distance, where you are, but the biggest variable is daylight, sunlight, location. I mean, I've used it across the street. I've used it, we've got a big shopping area outside ours. I've been 30, 40 feet away using it. It's identified things. Depends on the size of the text, of course, and what you're having. So there are a lot of variables. One of the variables is if the sun is shining, like any camera, you know, you're going to struggle. So people, you know, going back to, you said who would be using this, you know, people get flustered by that thought, but it didn't do it this time. Then I'm afraid that it's, you know, we're here to make things easier and better, not harder and worse. So, you know, people understand there will be variables. It depends on lighting. Is it, you know, getting dusk? Is it later in the evening? Am I going to be able to see? So you can't put a figure on how far does it take a picture. But, you know, it will give information that ordinarily wouldn't be there. And certainly in most cases, I'd say most front doors, if you're in a residential area or in a city area, look at things, you're probably only, I don't know, 3 or 4 meters away, and it works perfectly well.
It is an optical sensor, then. I just wanted to confirm that. If it was pitch black, then clear, it's not going to do like a LiDAR thing or something like that, where it would try and recognize a doorway. So, well, that's fantastic. Well, I would like to hear that, you know, being used in anger, just to kind of clarify. So, Martin, you are a Longcane user. Alan, you're sighted, but we won't hold that against you. So, Martin, have you had a chance to take it for a spin yet?
Yeah, I've used the door detection, and I've used there's other capabilities we'll talk about as well. I've used it, and as for a totally blind person, I'd say maybe 8 out of 10 you're going to get. You know, I'm pretty good with my, you know, ability to hold this up and to guess where doors are. But if you've got that door behind a privet hedge, you know, then obviously as a blind person, I'm walking down the street, I don't know that, do I? So, you know, but I do think it works pretty well. We have, as I say, there is AI in here, so this will improve over time. Everything's done on device, but we also, when we do updates, we can update our internal databases to improve the accuracy. There is also, as Alan's pointed out, the ability to kind of, you know, snap signs as you're walking down the street. That's something that, you know, if you've got to take your phone out to do that in a city or in somewhere that's a little bit maybe dicey, you know, if you're walking home, then it's not often safe to take your phone out and take a picture of a sign, whereas this does a pretty good job of that as well. There's also three detection modes, basically. You've got one, which is your address detection. Then there is another detection mode that is quick reading. And then there is a third detection mode, which is for doing OCR of pages. And it'll just, it's like scanning a single page and telling you what's on there. And that works really well as well. So, you know, some people, they don't want a full CCTV or kind of a standalone scanner, but they may just want to read the odd bit of mail that comes through the door. So this can work for them as well. And once again, we're looking at the person here who maybe isn't comfortable with something like seeing AI, or, you know, and using a touch screen for that aspect of it, but it does work really well.
Well, yeah, and of course, touchscreens are a nightmare when your hands are wet or it's raining or something like that. So it would work in those situations as well. Before we get into pricing and availability, was there anything else either of you wanted to highlight about the Stellar Trek?
I think from a user point of view, I think it's just that, you know, the accuracy is better than it has been on our previous devices. We've gone on and added things like, you know, updating over Wi-Fi and updating maps over Wi-Fi. We previously had that, but this is much faster. The downloading is much faster because of the platform we're on. And things just work a lot smoother. So I think although we've done GPS for a long time, and I'm proud of what we've done in GPS, you know, we've been doing it since 2004, certainly HumanWare as a company, 2003. I think this brings it on another step, and the package is really quite neat when you see it. It's about the size of a Nokia phone that you would have had maybe going back, Dave, maybe the first Nokia.
Well, it's been a real refreshing change talking to HumanWare about something other than Braille, because that's usually what we speak about when we're speaking with you guys. So, and of course, you know, Braille thing's all still going very strong, so we'll keep tabs on that, of course. So, Alan, can you let us know about the sort of availability and pricing for the Stellar Trek?
In terms of the pricing, I mean, we do offer all our products on a 12-month interest-free payment scheme. I'm very proud to say we're the first company in the sector to do so. So it's £90 a month if you spread the cost over 12 months. But if you wish to buy it outright, it's £1,049.
Okay. And is that excluding VAT, presumably?
That's excluding VAT. Yeah. So for our private customers, that's the price they would pay.
Okay, and Martin, do you want to just give us the website address where people can learn more and maybe place an order?
Yeah, you can go to www.humanware.com and you can call us on 01933 415 800, and you can email me or Alan. You can get martin.roberts@humanware.com or alan.davis@humanware.com. That's Davis. Or there's also eu.sales@humanware.com. We've put some tutorials on our YouTube channel to show people how to use the various functions on the device, the quick start kind of tutorials. They're already up there on our channel. And we're already working on the next software version, which we hope to have out before Christmas. So we're working on that already. We think it's something we're proud to be in GPS. I remember the first time I got GPS, it was great just to have that, the ability. And I remember it was 8 o'clock one night ringing Alan up my first week at HumanWare using a Braille note with a GPS in it, kind of like almost like a big backpack kind of thing, and saying, Alan, guess where I am? And he said, oh, what pub have you found now, Martin? You know, and, you know, it was just that thrill of being able to, I mean, we're all used to GPS now, but, you know, to actually have the option of using your phone or using something different. We're not saying that one is better than the other, we're just saying we're giving you another option. And I think that is good that the whole industry and the whole community has options. You know, it's the way we need it to be to move forward.
The Stellar Trek next generation GPS and optical device from HumanWare. Martin Roberts, Alan Davies, thanks very much. We've heard from Graham Langford, who has sent an email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Thank you, Graham, over there in Canada. And Graham wants to tell us about the Gladys app, which, as far as I can tell, appears to be an accessible way to build a reading list. So you can save links, PDFs, text files or anything pasted to your clipboard, and you can store all of that in a vertical list that's really easy to use with VoiceOver. Taz Nimasha, Callum Stoneman, either of you interested in Gladys?
Sounds very interesting. I'd definitely be wanting to check it out and learn a bit more about it. And really glad that Graham's written in and told us about it.
Yeah, thanks, Graham. This sounds really good. I mean, Safari does have a built-in reading list, but of course that's tied in with your browser and, you know, your tabs and your bookmarks and all the other things, and, you know, privacy reports and all the other things that it kind of throws at you. So having all that in a nice little vertical list that you can just drop things into, and he says in his email there that it appears on the share sheet as well. So if you're in an app, or you're in your browser and you want to share a link, you go to the share tab and there's an option there called save to Gladys or saving Gladys, and it will just add it to your list there. So seems very nice. Thanks for that. And, you know, we don't know everything on this show. We need people like you emailing with little bits of info like that. So yeah, thanks very much.
Yeah, I can't help thinking of Heidi High when I see the name Gladys. So that's on iOS, Gladys, GLADYS, available from the App Store. And of course, we would love to hear about any Android alternatives. We've also heard from Vaughan Lewis, who has Stargardt's, received a diagnosis at the age of 47. And Vaughan writes, before retiring, I was a government lawyer, and I was very interested in your conversation with Doverick, and that reluctance to accept help and use specialist aids, and really just not wanting anyone to make a fuss when it comes to sight loss in the workplace. Callum Stoneman, this is challenging, isn't it? That, you know, we had a fascinating chat with Dovrick, you know, a few weeks ago about how, you know, if your sight does change on the job, it can really be hard work asking for the help that you need.
Yeah, it really is a challenge. I mean, the last thing I think we all want is to be asking for help and then people thinking that you know, you can't do your job anymore, or you need help with everything, or people feeling like you can't be trusted with something to be able to do something independently and confidentially. And, you know, most of the time that's not how it is. And it is a kind of journey that you go through with sight loss, isn't it? There's an eventual point of acceptance, as he says in his email there. But yeah, it's a struggle. You know, I can absolutely understand that.
Vaughan writes, I have used an iPhone for 12 years and Supernova. I haven't learned Braille, and I'm also a Welsh speaker. The language of heaven. I'm new to your podcast, but I'm already a regular and enjoying the show. That's always lovely, that, Tasneem. I mean, when you do ask for help in the workplace, often you'll be surprised at how much is available.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a, you know, employment support that works with me, and I think it's brilliant. I've got that resource available to me, you know, throughout the day when I need it. But do I know about it when she's not around and she's on leave? You know, that's very different. But I then wouldn't want to be asking for support. But she's pretty good, you know, everything's kind of in line and prepared for, and there are bits and pieces that I might need which are minimal, but I still prefer not to ask other colleagues unless I absolutely have to.
And your personal assistant, is that funded through Access to Work?
It is, yeah. It's completely through Access to Work, and it's brilliant that resource is available for people with disabilities and health conditions. You know, absolutely would not be able to do my job without it.
Yeah, and I know Access to Work hasn't been the smoothest experience for many of late, but it's important to be aware that support is available through Access to Work, and funding to cover the additional costs of working with a disability in an employment setting can be tremendously helpful. So I would urge anybody whose eyesight may be changing, who is in work, to look into getting Access to Work support. Good to hear from you, Vaughan. And finally, we've heard from David Weston, who said that he is enjoying the show and was wondering where he could get hands on a WeWalk. Well, WeWalk is, of course, the smart cane. It's available from the RNIB shop. I think the price there is £549. David also goes on to say that he's been using computers and technology for over 30 years. He remembers Windowise, remember that screen reader? Jaws, and in more recent years, he's been using Apple products. He's 80 years old and also has hearing loss and enjoys the Synaptic Phone and Guide Connect computer. Well, good to know you found us there, David. Continue to spread the word, and thanks for getting in touch. And don't forget, of course, we want to hear from you. Any thoughts you have about technology, it doesn't matter if it's really techie or if it's something that you think everybody already knows, that you just don't know what you don't know. So do get in contact. The email address, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And if you're feeling up to it, we'd love to receive an audio message. So why not just attach a little audio clip to your email, and we'll try and get your voice on Tech Talk.
This is Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio, and I'm delighted to be joined by Freek van Velsnes, one of the founders of Hable, who, of course, are responsible for the Hable One Braille keyboard. Hello, Freek. How's it going?
Hi, Callum. It's going great. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us. So tell us a bit about the Hable One and what it is and how it works.
Yes, of course. So the Hable One, we always explain it as your assistant to your smartphone. And you can kind of imagine it as a remote controller for the phone. So it's a small device around the size of the old iPhone 6. On one side, it has 8 buttons, and with a combination of those buttons, you fully control your iPhone or Android phone. So you do it with a combination of Brill, but also a combination to navigate your VoiceOver or TalkBack. So what you'll typically see is the people that are using the Hable One, they'll have their phone in their bag or in their pockets, and they just hold the Hable One in front of them. And with that, they type messages, scroll over social media, make grocery lists, whatever you want to do with your phone. You do everything with the Hable One and with the input of the 8 buttons.
Okay, interesting. So tell us a bit about how this product came about, because this came about as a design project, is that right?
Yeah, so I'm one of the co-founders, and I have another co-founder, so we're the two of us, which is who is Ayush Mom. And he actually lived together with his grandfather, who turned visually impaired at a later stage in life. And because of that, he just got a lot of experience of, he was reading the newspaper, his grandfather, he was kind of walking around, helping him with his phone. And at some point, he participated in a hackathon where they said, hey, why don't we see if we can help Ayush's grandfather use his phone easier and in a better way and completely independently? And that's really where the project kind of started. That was just an idea, and it's the idea back then was quite different to what we ended up developing. But that was the starting point. And since then, I think we had 2.5 to 3 years of just testing with as many people as we could. So we have had 30, 40, 50 prototypes. And we finally got to something that we were very happy with, and that almost everyone that we tested with said, hey, that's actually something I would like to buy and like to have in my daily life. And that's when we brought the Hable One to the market. So that's kind of the backstory that we have.
And I'm always interested in this. Where was the Braille aspect from? Because, I mean, we know as blind people that Braille's often not a very popular choice. In fact, a lot of people say, oh, you know, and I don't agree with this personally, but a lot of people say, oh, Braille's going out of fashion now. You know, it's all about TTS and it's all about QWERTY keyboards. So was there a reason for kind of, you know, sticking to the traditional Braille method of input?
Yeah. That's actually a decision that we made very consciously, because I mean, we know that a large portion of people who are blind actually don't use Braille. But so it's good to also clarify, we only use the input of Braille. So actually there's no reading in Braille. The reading, the output is always still an audio. So we just use it as an input method. And the reason why we do this is because with the Hable One, you actually hold the product in the air. So you don't place it down like you would with any other keyboards. But you hold it in the air with two hands, and that way you can use it literally in any situation. So if you're standing outside, if you're in the park, if you're sitting wherever you are, you can always use it. And that for us was super important, that it's, I mean, when you want to use your phone in all sorts of situations, and if you would be limited to sitting down, that's for us not really accessible. So by this way, by using Braille, we could actually make sure that you could use it at any stage. So you could use it while holding in the air. Plus it works really well with combining it with shortcuts and navigation functions on the phone. So for us, those two reasons together saw that it was like the best solution. Now, on the other side, because we know that a lot of people don't know Braille, we actually also made it so you don't have to know Braille to use the Hable One. An example in the Dutch market, so in the Netherlands, actually almost now half of the users are non-Braille users. And that's because you can also type using dictation with Hable One. So you have a shortcut for dictation. You have other ways to use the product. But kind of, as a trick, you will learn to use and type in Braille in the process. So a lot of our users will actually get used to typing in Braille without them really knowing it. So that for us also was a really important factor, that even if you don't know Braille, you can still use this product in like very short period of time. That combination was kind of the reasoning behind it and what we went for.
So this isn't just for, although it's a Braille keyboard, this isn't necessarily just for Braille users. You know, you're saying that people could, you know, if you're not necessarily a Braillist, you could still pick this keyboard up and still, obviously there would be a bit of a learning curve, but there wouldn't be too much of a learning curve to kind of start using it.
Yeah, 100%. This is very true. I mean, so originally we didn't design it for people that didn't know Braille. But as we kind of were developing it further, we've done a lot of updates. There's a lot of extra support material. And now we see that it's almost a better fit to people that are either non-Braille users or very beginning Braille users, because they will learn it very quickly to use the product. I think if you don't know any Braille at all, but you're like average on how fast you adapt to new technology, it's a matter of a few days. It's not more than that. And that's for us something that's super exciting. I would definitely advise you, if you're not a real user, actually just to try it once with the starting guide. It is really easy to get going, and especially if you have issues with swiping gestures. That's like the main reason people actually start using this, is the swiping gestures on the screen, the different ways to use voice over talkback can be super annoying, energy consuming. It's can be very inconvenient. And this is a way to do that with physical buttons. And that's often the reason for people to start. And without you almost noticing it, you'll also learn typing in Braille in the process and using the whole phone like that.
You made a really interesting point there. And that's something that I was going to ask about, because I'm sure you've had this before as well. There are people out there who would probably say, well, you know, you can, it's perfectly possible to use the touch screen and to navigate by, you know, swiping around, and even typing on the touch screen is possible. So is it your experience that it's the physical buttons that are kind of the selling point, I guess, for a lot of people? You know, do you find that there are still a lot of people out there who still struggle with that touchscreen experience?
Yeah. So I think first it's good to comment that I don't think the Habbo One is for everyone. I think that's whenever I think any manufacturer or designer would say that the product is fit for a whole target group, often that's not true. And I think that's the same with us. So I think if you are a user with an iPhone or Android phone, and you're already very quick with it, so I think if you can do everything with it, you're very fast, I don't advise you to get a Habbo One or another product that's like something you have to carry with you extra. So for that group, I think it's less relevant. Although I would say just try it once, because for some people you become even faster. But I think that's a small group. So yeah, the real like group that benefits is just for by using the physical buttons. It is so much easier to use a physical button than to learn the swiping gestures. And that's also the kind of the design reasoning behind the product. So we would not necessarily be the most efficient or fast the product to use, I would say, but we are for sure the easiest and the most intuitive. That is really have been our entire focus. So in 10 minutes, you will be able to do all the basics on your phone, like single swipes, entering an item, going back to the home screen. That is something that is super easy with the Habbo One. And that's really what we're going for. So anyone should be able to at least use the basics of their phone really quickly by using this. So I think that's really also the main group that we're now catering to, is the group of people who struggle a little bit more and just want to make it easy for them to use their phone.
I read something really interesting recently, that the design of this was kind of inspired by the sort of design of a game controller, the experience of having all the buttons there, but you can still hold it in your hand. I'm really interested in that. Do you think there's other aspects of the sort of gaming world that could be relevant to, you know, accessible design or design for those who maybe blind or partially sighted, or just the disabled community in general?
So you're right about this. So it really looks a little bit like a game controller. And when you're using this, we often get the comment that people, it's almost like I'm gaming on my phone. And there's a very good reason for that. So I love gaming. I used to be a big gamer when I was younger. I used to game all the time. And I think that aspect is there also because it should also be fun, right? To use a product and to use your phone for, your phone is often for leisure activities. And then it's fun if you're kind of, having that gaming feeling on your phone. That's also a big reason why actually a lot of kids use the Habbo One. So we are often in a lot of schools, you have many children with a visual impairment that are using the Habbo One because they're gaming on their phone. Like they're actually playing games with the Habbo. We had this this comment from a young man, I think he's Daniel was his name, from the UK, and his parents were calling and saying, hey, we love the Habbo One, Daniel loves the Habbo One, but now even on the toilet, he is gaming on his phone and doing his homework from there. So I think it kind of gives a good idea about that. You can literally use it anywhere, and it really feels like that gaming controller vibe with it.
And to be fair, I guess that's just as bad as a lot of sighted people doing that.
yes. It's equally bad, I think.
So it's been a really interesting conversation. Before I let you go, because I know you're a busy guy, but can you tell us anything about potentially the future of this sort of device, either the future of the Habbo One as a product or the future of the company? Are there any, you know, new products coming? Are there any ideas for improvement that you've got?
Yes. So I'll give the answer in twofold. So first about the product itself, the Habbo One. So I think what you'll see is there are still a lot of software updates to come. Actually, we launched it so last year, October, and already since then, there have been a few updates with some, which I think are really cool features. We added the press and hold. So that means on WhatsApp, you can actually now send voice messages directly with the Hable. There are other features with languages that are added, more functions that you cannot actually do with just voiceover, but we can sequence them. And that is something that we'll actually keep on developing. So we tend to provide multiple software updates in a year. They're all for free always. And they will just add a lot of functionality. So you'll have like, what we're planning to do is add certain modules. So think of, for example, a web browser module. So whenever you're in a web browser, we actually have like some speed hacks almost that allows you to go specifically to certain headings, that with one button you go to the search option, and that you're especially fast in certain environments. So that's one thing on the product side that's coming up and that we're developing right now to make it easier and efficient to work in different types of your phone, so or different place of your phone, like from internet to WhatsApp to socials. And for the company, so we really have seen now with this introduction of the Hable, like how much requests there are for assistance with using the smartphone. And that is something we really want to double down on. So we are developing a lot of material for supporting people to use their phone with the Hable and without the Hable. And that's also what we're going to do for the future. So we're already thinking of more products that can help people use their phone easier, a lot of support material, online assets. And that's really where the focus is for us right now, making sure anyone with a visual impairment can really get everything out of their smartphone because it's such an amazing machine.
And those improvements that you mentioned for the products, I'm guessing they will come in the form of like software updates to the device.
Exactly. So you have a updating program, everyone gets an updating program, and you can just from your home update the software. It's relatively easy to do, and that's always for free. A lot of these software updates, they are because of requests of our users. So the same with the press and hold, there were like multiple users that, hey, can you not develop this? So we investigated it, developed it, and then just push the software back to the users. They can download it from their homes. And now everyone has that software. So I think that's one of the cool things, and which I personally really like, that we are literally developing what people are asking for.
And if people do have requests, you know, and they want to ask for features or assistance or just want to give feedback, what's the best way of them getting in contact with you?
Yeah, so the best way is just to send it to our general email address. If you want any contact or questions about the product or whatever, which is via support@imhable.com. And also on our website, there are multiple places where you can fill out your details, so we reach out directly to you. And the last thing I would say is we have actually community groups, so like mailing lists. They are open for you to join. There's also on our website. And there you can also interact directly with other users. So we there have some threads of people saying, hey, I would like this feature. More people respond to it. And then we would also respond and say, hey, yeah, that's great. We're going to investigate and see if we can develop this for the new update.
Okay, fantastic. Freek van Velsnes from Hable, thanks so much for joining us. And hopefully we can hear more from you in the future.
Thank you so much. I hope so too.
Well, that's it. That's all we've got time for this week on Tech Talk. Do tune in next time when we will be revisiting the accessible in-home display to keep track of those all-important energy costs. Don't forget, of course, if you have a technology problem, question, or issue that you would like some help with, you can, of course, contact RNIB's Technology for Life team. You can call the helpline on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999, or you can drop them a line, tfl@rnib.org.uk. That's tfl@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Callum Stoneman, Tasni Marshad, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, we're out. Cheers, guys.
Thank you, and see you soon.
Thank you. See you next week.
And from me, Dave Williams. Bye for now.